Welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, July 14th, and you're listening to episode 111. Thank you for joining us today. Sitting here is myself, Jason, and then sitting across from me on the internet is also Jason, and that is Jason Katarski. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing real good, man. Thanks for letting me sit in.
Yeah. So here's the story. Rob is out of town right now. As you're hearing this, he's somewhere in the United Kingdom, I believe. He's over there with his wife having a jolly old time. So I needed a guest host, an actual guest co-host, instead of just an additional host. So I immediately called up Jason Katarski because he's never doing anything.
Totally a bum, dude. I don't do anything productive. I just sit around and wait for you to call, Jason.
That's what I heard. Well, me and Andy, because I know Andy calls you too. So
totally. You know.
So how's it? How's it been going? Going good?
Yeah, things are going really good. Just kind of got back from family vacation, settling back into the real life routine, which is always a challenge, but doing well, man.
That's the toughest, right? Like you go on vacation, like you want to come home. Eventually, you're like, man, it'd be nice to go back to our house. But I really like this whole vacation vibe. Like, could I not go back to, like, a job and stuff? Could I just go hang out for a while?
Totally. And then you get home and you're, like, wishing after this two-day, 24-hour drive that you had, like, a day or two to be on vacation at home. Which, luckily, because of my flexibility in my life, I was able to do that. But I know that it's difficult if you don't get that little recuperating time from your relaxing vacation.
Right. Yeah, we've gotten better about trying to build that in. We used to be like, all right, and we'll get back Sunday night at midnight and we'll go to work on Monday. And then we were like, wait, that's stupid. Like, let's get back Saturday at 5 p.m. and then not have to go to work till Monday, because that sounds better.
Yeah, you're totally not 21 years old anymore.
And boy, do I remember that every time I stay out late. That's the thing, man. I feel like, you know, I waited to have kids until we were in our 30s, and I feel like we would do better staying up till 1 a.m. with a crying baby if I was 21 still, instead of being 34.
Totally, man.
So, you been playing any super fun games of late?
You know, I have been playing some super fun games because I was on vacation, right? And we went down to Jupiter, Florida, is where my in-laws have a condo. And they were there with us, so they were helping out with the kids a little bit. And that meant that Lisa and I could take it easy a little bit, my wife. And we had to play a few games while we were down there. We played a new one from AEG, which is a two-player game called Pagoda.
And, yeah.
Oh, dude, it's fantastic. It's a great little tactical game where you're managing a hand of cards. You have two cards in your hand, and you have a table. You have five cards on the table in front of you, and that makes up your full hand, these seven cards. So some of it's, you know, open information, and some of it's hidden information. And you play these cards. They're just different colors, and there's these different six spaces on the board where you can build pagodas. And you're trying to play a card of a certain color to build columns. And you have to build four columns before you can build a level of the pagoda. So you actually are physically building this little, you put a tile on top of four columns, and you build them until they're about four tall. And you get points for every column you build. You get different points for the tiles that make up the pagoda. And then you get different points for the rooftop. And it's this kind of back and forth, like trying to just score more points by placing cards in the right combinations before your opponent does. And when you get to three finished pagodas, the game ends. So it's really nice. It's got this really cool visual appeal. I picked it up at Origins, and Rob came over and he was like, so how much is this, like, innkeepers? And it is totally different,
right? Yeah, other than the physical building part, from what I've seen, it looks complete. Innkeepers is a bit more complex, I think, with the different choices you're making and things with the resources and stuff.
Yeah, I was able to play that at Proto Spiel in Wisconsin, and there's a little bit more going on in the game. So this is just a light 30-minute. I mean, whoops, still thoughtful, you know, kind of a thinky game, but a fun two-player game. So I played a little bit of that. I just got this game from Blue Orange Games that you're probably going to be excited about. I actually got two games. I haven't played one of them yet, but Nia, NIYA. It's a new little abstract tile game by Bruno Cathala.
Hey.
Yeah, and this is a simple, cute little game. And what's neat, I interviewed for 20 Minutes of Filler, my podcast. I interviewed the guy from Blue Orange Games, and kind of noticed that they're putting out these little these strategy games now. And more so than just like the kids' games that is typical for their company. And he said, hey, we're just trying to kind of grow with our families. You know, like families buy our kids stuff, and we want stuff that they can keep playing with their kids as their kids grow, and something they can enjoy as adults. And I think that's really smart. So they have these quick, small games they're putting out. And Nia is a neat game where, or Naya, we'll figure that out one day. But it has this this awesome Japanese art, and it comes in a little tin. And it's got these really thick 8 discs with these silk screened kind of Japanese character art on them. And then there's these tiles. It's a 4x4 grid of tiles. And each tile has 2 features on them, like leaves and a bird, or a sun and a scroll. And you can you take one of your character discs. It's another 2-player game. And you place your disc anywhere in this grid to start on the outer edge. And you take the tile that is in the place where you place it. Now, your opponent has to play there on their turn. They have to match one of the 2 features on the tile that you just removed. So if you remove the leaves and the bird, then they have those 2 choices to find any other tile that has one of those features, and they can place their piece there. And it's a 4-in-a-row game. You can either connect 4-in-a-row diagonally or orthogonally, or get a square of 4. Or you can, the other way you win is by not having a legal move for the other player. So okay. It's a real simple, it takes about 5 minutes to play, but the components are super nice, and it's like, throw it in your backpack, take it to the coffee shop, 2-player kind of game. So been playing a bit of that, and Andy was over the other night, and we just played some Star Realms, the deck builder that's kind of blowing up the universe, which is a nice little light deck builder that has a little bit more going on than I don't know, a simple game. Like, there's just some neat combinations that kind of twists they did in the deck building genre with just a 100 card deck. And then the other one we played was Brave Rats, another Blue Orange game by Seiji Kanai. This one is like a love letter for 2 players with some really cute rats on it. So it's just a fun like war game. You have 8 cards, and you each choose a card simultaneously. They're numbered 0 through 8, and whoever plays the highest card wins, except that there's a power on each card as well, so the powers kind of trump the numbers. And it's a cool kind of bluffing, blind bidding kind of game where you're just kind of trying to outguess your opponent, and it's a really fun another quick filler. So I've been playing a fair amount of quick games, so
you kind of have to do that, right?
Yeah, that's kind of like the shtick of our show, right? Like, that's what we talk about. And that's just because that's what I really enjoy. I mean, I like games that are an hour and a half, too, but I just get a whole lot more gaming in when I can play these little short games and can play them with a lot more variety of people as well. So, last one I want to mention that I've been playing, we went to Dice Tower Convention because my game, Great Heartland Hall & Company, was nominated for a Dice Tower Award this year, and we were in Florida during Dice Tower Convention when they were announcing the award, so my wife and I took off for a day, and they had an awesome game library at Dice Tower Con. And I was looking at all the games, and I'm looking at this wall of like every new hot game that I could play, and I see in the corner, Tok Tok Woodman.
Nice.
And I had to grab this game and check it out because it's a dexterity game, and I knew it would be quick, and I knew it would be rules light and easy to teach because we were getting ready to head home to the condo for a 2.5-3 hour drive. And Tok Tok Woodman is great. Have you played this game today?
No, I haven't. I've seen that game, but I haven't. Yeah.
Oh, dude, it's so good. It's just like a stack of it's a log, right? It's like a tree, and you have a little plastic axe, and you're trying to tap the different, like, the tree is like slices, like think of like lifesavers, you know, so like stacked on their end, and you take your axe and you try to chop at the tree gently. You get 2 chops, and you're trying to move these little slices of the tree around, because if you move them far enough, the bark will fall off, and you get a point for each piece of bark you manage. There's 4 pieces on each slice of the tree, and if you knock off the whole slice, like, and you get the core of the tree as well, that's -5 points.
So
it's easy to just obliterate this tree, but then you get negative points. Like, I won the first game with -2, like, because Lisa had more negative points than me. Like, that's the only reason that I won the game. So, but we played this game over and over again. We played like four games on our own. And then this couple walked by and they're like, what is this? And I'm like, sit down and play. Let's go. And we played another like four or five games with them. And just, you know, as you go, you just learn it takes a lot of finesse. But it just, oh man, it was a blast. So as soon as I went home that night, I was tweeting because it's out of print. And I looked on Amazon and people were trying to sell them for $100 a piece when it's a $16 game.
Wow.
And I just put a tweet out and said, hey, anybody know where I get one of these? And a Twitter person said, hey, I have two from the Kickstarter. I'll sell you one at my cost. So thank you, Twitterverse. That was the awesome gaming community coming through. So I'm going to be getting that game shipped to my house pretty soon. So lots of fun games lately. So I'm happy about that. What about you? Have you played anything cool?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I've been playing lately, other than getting some protos ready, has been, I don't think we talked about this yet, Rob and I went to a Dice Masters tournament here in Kalamazoo.
Oh, nice.
From Marvel Dice Masters. I was undefeated and took first place.
Dude, congrats. How many people were there, though? That's the question, right?
Six, I think. So,
oh, that's not bad, dude.
Yeah, no, we played three rounds. I got a total of five games in because, the rounds are designed to be best out of three, but they only give you 45 minutes, which is not nearly enough time to get best out of three in that game.
Okay.
So so they ended up just letting us play for an hour, or at least until somebody finished one game. Because like the first round, the guy and I played one game.
Oh, wow.
I was like the full
eight character cards? Is that what you were...
No, you brought four, and then you got 10 packs to build your other four out.
Okay.
And I was really happy with my choices. Have you played the game before?
I played it a few times with Andy, kind of learning it, and I really loved it. We just played with four character cards, though, because, like, it's a lot of information to track when you're first learning the game.
Yes, absolutely. And that's ideally, that's what we did, too. I mean, because we were just playing with those four cards, and then, like, you got more cards out of your packs, and I used a couple of them during the games, but because you don't have to actually use them, you can, you know, you just don't purchase them, right? You just keep them in your group. I mean, I built a core four that was really solid. And, you know, that was my whole plan, was only use something else as better. And I pulled, like, a Black Widow, and she's good, so I used one of her dice a couple times, but that was it.
Cool.
And I my proudest moment was, in my first game, he had this, he had Iron Man, and he kept gaining life. There was a point in the game when I had one hit point left, and he had 19.
Oh, my goodness.
And I won.
That's an awesome comeback, dude.
Yeah, I was very proud of that moment. I just focused a lot on global abilities. I built a deck with a bunch of weenies who are really wimpy and small. Well, not wimpy, but really cheap guys.
Okay.
And then saved lots of dice to use global abilities to manipulate gameplay. And it worked really well. He would be like, I'm attacking you. And I'm like, I spend these three masks. Now no one is attacking me.
Wow.
And he was getting very frustrated by that. So,
I haven't dug into the global abilities very much. Like, there was maybe one on one of the cards in the games we played, so I have a lot more to explore.
Yeah, the global abilities seem to be what really can break that game using things. I mean, that's the only reason I won, is because he would try and do something and I would use a global ability to stop him.
And that's just, like, you can afford, like, if it's on a card, anybody can use it as long as you can afford it, right?
Yep, so what would happen against my opponents, a lot of people were playing, like, more mid-range to bigger guys that were more expensive. So one of two things would happen. They would try and use my global abilities against me, which means they were saving dice, which means they couldn't get their big guys out, which was a problem for them. Or they were ignoring them and getting their big guys out, and then I would just use them to stop them. So it kind of, like, because I mean, the most expensive guy I had was Wolverine, the Knucklehead, which is, like, the super rare.
Ooh, fancy.
And he's, yeah, I pulled him out of a pack. So,
no way, dude, that's awesome.
He cost six to play, which is kind of expensive, but he's, like, my last-ditch effort. He can't be blocked when he attacks alone. So if you put him out when somebody's got a bunch of stuff, like Mr. Fantastic or something you can't get through, you put him out and he just wrecks them. But mostly other than that, Hawkeye is four. He's the most expensive guy that I played. So I was constantly filling my pool with extra guys, so I would have lots of leftover energy that I could hold on to manipulate kind of the game state. And I'm excited for the next tournament because if you win, the winner of after the end of 6 months of tournaments gets a Phoenix Force card. It's Phoenix Force with a unique die. You can't get it anywhere else. So it's pretty exciting. I got... Rob took second place. He only lost two games, and that was in the final round to me. We both got a Thor card that you only get from winning one of the tournaments. So that was pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you this is the kind of gamer you used to be, though, right? You were in. Were you into Magic and minis and like competitive?
Yeah. It's certainly. Right? It's. I'm not gonna lie. It scratches an itch. So.
For sure.
It's very easy for me to get into this game.
That's cool. You know, that's something that's totally foreign to me. Like, I'm not very good at that. Like, putting together, like, I played a little bit of Magic back in high school, and I tried to do a draft night a few years ago, and it was awful experience for me. I'm like, these people don't want to play with somebody who doesn't know the game. They want to just play their game and, like, obliterate me and move on to the next game. And, like, so it wasn't a very good learning environment. But it was the only way I was going to play because my wife wasn't going to play with me, you know? Or, like, I played with a Harry Potter collectible card game, like a dead game that I picked up that's awesome.
Yeah, I've got some friends that are really into that.
Dude, and that's by the same dude, like Mike Elliott, who helped make Couriers and who's made Thunderstone. Like, he's one of the main guys.
Oh, okay. Mike and Eric. Yeah.
So, super, super good game. But, like, I'm terrible at, like, putting together a deck to win. I'm really good at, like, putting some cards together and just having fun seeing what they do, you know? Like, but I don't have that sense of, like, what would be really cool to work together to, you know? So, like, I'm not competitive in that sense, you know? Just, that's not fun for me. Like,
right.
Mostly because I probably will lose most games I play. I just am there for the experience, but.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what? I mean, like, different people, different types of gamers. I mean, you know, for me, like, those competitive games have just always been fun, and it's something that I've always been okay at. So, Dice Masters is weird because I'm used to having miniatures on a board I can move around, which that is where I feel like I excel because I do better with that type of, you know, like, abstract thinking of moving the pieces to try and, you know, make plans and such. And so it's different for me. Like, the rules of this game are one of the most tightly designed rules I've seen in a competitive game for balance. I mean, like, when I knock your characters out, you get them right back. You get to roll those dice next time.
Right.
That is, man, like, it just makes you have to think about everything you're doing so much differently than you would in another type of competitive game where you can just have a runaway winner. And I love that. I mean, the fact that I was at one hit point and the guy had 19 and I won is a testament to how balanced that game is, you know?
Yeah.
So, I was very, very impressed with how well the game works. So I can't wait to keep playing it. It's kind of addictive. I have to stop myself from buying a bunch of packs of it. So,
but you gotta buy the right one so you can put together the right four cards so you can win the Phoenix Force, man.
I could go to the next tournament though and just get wiped. I mean, you never know. I've had that happen to me before. So, and I've had that happen with games I played a lot more than this game. So, but hey, we should talk about something else. Let's why don't we move on to our feature of the week? And we thought this time that it would be cool since Mr. Katarski here decided he's going to just go crazy and be a publisher and publish games and stuff, or at least a game, or at least try to publish a game.
That's the plan.
Well, I only say that because you haven't done it yet, but
that's true.
You you decided to do that, and you know, I did a little bit of that with Water Balloon Washout, but that was really just for me. That was, you know, I wanted to get a game out there so that I could put a game out there, you know, because I wanted to test the waters and see what it was like, never believing that I would start really publishing games, you know.
Right.
It was a semi-positive experience. I would do it again. But, I mean, you're really making a go of it. Like, you're really, at least as far as I understand, is that correct?
Well, you know, there's a couple different... I mean, there's different ways that people go about it, right? Like, go about the publishing thing. You can do what you did, and that's great. Like, you publish your own game. It's kind of a fun thing. And you put out a game, and you say, hey, I put out a game. That was kind of fun. Maybe I'll do that again. Or somebody like Jason Glover. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he has a publishing company called Grey Gnome Games, and he does, like, all his own titles. He publishes his own games. He doesn't publish anybody else's. And it's kind of like... it's a real business for him. Like, he's had some really successful Kickstarters. He's put out some really interesting games. Like, recently was the one called Dig Down Dwarf.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a vanity publisher, right? Like it's just him putting out his games. And, And that's cool. That's like a part of his income now. It's a part of his job, you know, and not so much just a side hobby. And what I'm thinking about is I don't really want to be the guy who only puts out my own games. Because I mean, it's really fun for me to work with other people, and I love designing games. And my game, Greater Harlan Hall & Company, was with Dice Hate Me Games, right? And I got really lucky that my first game was with, like, one of the awesomest up-and-coming publishers in the business, right? And I learned a ton because Chris Kirkman, the owner, he's a good friend. And, like, you know, it's like I'm a part of the family, you know? And, like, and he'll answer any questions I have. He, you know, like, he knows I haven't had a game published before, so he's patient and understanding. And he's a new publisher, and we just really worked together. We were both involved in the whole development process. I'm really involved in marketing the game. I go to the conventions and work the Dice Hate Me booth when we're at Origins. So I learned a lot about the business just working with Chris for the Great Harlan Hall & Company. And then I continue to, you know, design games. And I thought, you know, like, it's too fun to work with other people. Like, I have a game coming out with Patrick Nickel called Dead Drop. And that's going to be hitting Kickstarter in the fall. And it's fun to work with somebody else who has a different style and different interests. And, you know, like, one game might not work with one publisher, but it might work with another. And somebody, you know, it might fit in better with their line. So I like being able to work with a variety of people. I also know that all of... I mean, like, my games aren't the only games out there that are good, you know? I have a lot of friends who design games, and, like, for instance, Andy, you know, Andy Lennox, my co-host on 20 Minutes Filler, and your regular guest here now on Building the Game.
Yeah, we love Andy here, so.
He's awesome. He's a local guy, and we connected because we both like games, and he was trying to design games, and I was trying to design games, and working on games... Like, whether it's mine or his, like, it's fun to kind of develop games too, right? So I've worked a little bit with Andy and kind of gave him some feedback on his games. And then you get into these little kind of indie game circles where you go to the Unpub events or the Unpub festival and you play other people's games and give them feedback. And you go to Protospiel and you play a bunch of unpublished games and kind of give people feedback and see how different ideas come together. And I realized that it's almost as fun for me to sit down and help somebody with their game, you know, as it is to work on my own. So those are some of the kind of conclusions that I don't know, some things that led me to the conclusion that I wanted to take a stab at publishing. You know, I don't necessarily want to do all my own games because, well, that's no fun because I don't get to work with people, you know, that I'm just working with myself and I get tired of myself. You know, new ideas are good and people help, you know, make my life better. So I want to be around other people that are creative and help them kind of realize, you know, their dreams too. But, so, I mean, that's all getting ahead of myself, too. Like, that's the long-term goal, is not just to be a publisher that publishes my own games, but to kind of figure out, like, you know, when do I do my own game, you know? And when do I do a game that I've collaborated on with somebody else? And when do I take a game to another publisher? Because maybe it's not a good fit for what I want to do with my company, Green Couch Games.
Right, and that's so interesting to me. Like, that is the idea that you could be like, I made this game, but I don't really want to publish this myself. This is a better fit for another company I know. And I think that's cool, right? I mean, because I wondered that about you. Like, how will he decide? And I think it should be a pretty easy decision, right? Because you should be able to look and say, these are the types of games I'm putting out. This is a different type of... Because you design lots of different types of games. You know, I know that because I've played so many of them. And they're all, you know, they all stand on their own. They're all different. So, you know.
Right. You know, that was the trickiest thing for me too, because I had this idea in my head about, I think it'd be fun to publish games, and then the fear is like, well, if I publish games, then like nobody else will want to work with me because I'm publishing my games, or if I publish my own games, then maybe people will think that like other publishers didn't want them because they're not good enough, or maybe people will say, well, I don't want to publish this game from him because he didn't publish it himself, so maybe he thinks that's not good enough. You know, so it seems like kind of tricky waters to navigate, right? Like, what's the deal?
Well, I think the thing you've done right for it is you've got Heartland Hauling. How many other games do you have? Well, you have Frog Flip is also out.
Yep.
How many other games do you have that are announced with publishers in development?
Right now, two others, if you include the one that I'm publishing.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and I have a few that are kind of in different stages of development or consideration, that kind of a thing.
Right.
So, but nothing super solid right now.
Well, yeah, and I mean, so I guess what I'm trying to say there is you stepped out and you said, look, I've worked with a couple different publishers. People like my games. You know, they're good games. Different publishers want them. But sometimes I want to publish them on my own. I think that makes it safer for you rather than if you were to say, like, get one game published by a publisher and people are like, that's all right. And then suddenly you just publish all your own games. Then people are like, hey, wait a minute. What's up with that?
Right. Well, I tell you what, dude, working with Chris and Dice Hate Me and getting my game out there, Heartland doing so well, getting nominated for the Dice Tower Award, you know, like, has really given me a great opportunity, a great platform. Like, I've been, you know, I've met so many great people in the industry because of the opportunity that Chris gave me, you know?
Right.
And I'm totally grateful for that. You know, I don't ever want to step on anybody's toes with that either. Like, hey, you gave me, you know, like, I'm not coming in to be like, I'm here to, like, be your competition. You know, it's, the industry doesn't have to be like that, you know?
The market, like, getting more games published, it doesn't matter who's publishing them, getting more good games out there is good for everyone.
Yeah, so that's you know, I've been kind of like sorting through some of that stuff, and I figured the thing that really made it click for me is like, how do I be a designer and try my hand at publishing? What happened was Chris Kirkman, Dice Hate Me, signed Pie Factory by Brian Fisher, and Brian Fisher is one of the co-owners of Nevermore Games.
Right, yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and I'm like, wait a minute, this is kind of cool because, and I knew, and I asked Brian, I'm like, so why didn't you put this out yourself? And I already knew the answer, and the answer was, hey, it's because it doesn't fit Nevermore's brand.
Because it's called Pie Factory,
yeah,
and that's not going to be a game that Nevermore Games is ever going to publish.
Right, but it's perfect for Dice Hate Me. So,
exactly.
So, you know, what I have to do is carve out kind of what kind of games Green Couch is going to do, and then sometimes if my games fall into that category, maybe I'll put them out. At this point, the first game I'm publishing is one that I designed, but I co-designed it with another designer, Philip DeBerry.
Right.
And that's that makes me feel better because I'm starting off on that foot of this isn't just about me. You know, this is just as much Philip's game as it is mine that I'm publishing. And I hope that, you know, and if I get to game number two or three or four, you know, like, a good percentage of those won't be my own, you know, that, and what my kind of brand is, the idea of Green Couch Games is, great little games that make great big connections. So,
That's good. Yeah, that's a good tagline.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I want to make games that would fit, on an episode of 20 Minutes of Filler, you know, games that are easy to learn, easy to teach, that are approachable by lots of different audiences that play in less than an hour, that are maybe components light, just simple filler type games, or, you know, sometimes maybe a little more strategy type filler games, but games that can be, you know, just appeal to a wide audience. And kind of, you know, they go hand in hand with my interests, with the show that I'm doing. And not all my games fit into that. Heartland doesn't really quite fit into that. Some people say it's like a filler, but it's a little bit more than that too, so it doesn't necessarily fit those strict guidelines. So that's kind of what I'm going with, you know. It's like, maybe if it's a filler, maybe I'll put it out, but if it's a bigger game, then maybe I'll go a different direction and seek out some other publication homes, you know.
Well, then, I mean, let's be honest, right? I mean, if you want to make a living, say, at doing something like this, right? One of the best ways to do that is to multitask, right? So you don't maybe want to put out as many games as Dice Hate Me does, right? Like, because they have been steadily growing, right? Maybe you just want to be able to put a game, or, you know, one game out a year or two games out a year. But obviously you can do even better for yourself if you're also having games published by other companies. Because it continues to, obviously, we all know, and we get royalties from these games that are published. And then in addition to that, it's just more name recognition, which then helps the games you're publishing. Because, I mean, if I know a good game designer, right, and I like the games they design, and they say, hey, this is a good game, you should play it, I want to play it. But if they, in addition to that, say, hey, I want to publish that game, I think, well, hey, like, they really believe this is a good game. You know what I mean? So I think it lands some credence to that, right? It's kind of like like when you trust a company, like, you know, if I see a game from Dice Hate Me, I know it's going to probably be a game I'm going to like, and I know it's going to be a quality game because that's what they do. Right. And I think that helps you ahead of time when you're putting out your first game, especially that you're a co-designer on it. People don't have to say, man, you know, I've never seen anything from this company because they're new. Is it good? They can say, hey, Katarsky does good games. Philip DeBerry does good games. I'm going to bet this is a good game, you know?
Yeah, I hope so. You know, and that's the trick, too, is in publishing, right? You want to have that consistency, right? Like, you have to have every game be a game that somebody is going to love. You know, maybe one person isn't going to love every game you put out, but you have to have, like, that continued quality of game out there so people do trust you. So like you just said about Dice Hate Me, it's like, well, hey, Dice Hate Me puts out good games, they do good quality, they have a good track record. Hey, you know, if this looks interesting, I'm going to get it because they do good work. You know, so Right. You have to find those good games, you have to follow through, you have to communicate, like, and that's a big part of it, too, is consistency, you know? So, and as a designer, you know this. You've been doing your documentary podcast for 2 years now, right? And you know that some ideas take a long time to bake, and others come together really quickly, you know? So, Right. So the cool thing is, like, I don't have to feel like I have to create the next game if I'm just a designer right now. You know, like, I can say, okay, I got these ideas brewing. None of them are quite ready yet. I'm going to see what some other folks have out there and see if there's anything that catches my eye, or, you know, friends are working on stuff. Maybe I can work with some friends to put out some games in the meantime, you know? So it gives me another outlet to stay more engaged in the industry. And that's what it's all about for me, is, like, I love this industry. I love these people. I love the creativity. I love games. And I want to just be more a part of it. That's why I started a podcast. That's why I, you know, designed my first game in the first place. Is like, I thought it would be fun, you know, to get involved.
Right.
And in my life where I'm at right now, kind of like job wise, like, I have flexibility and the opportunity to do this, you know? I'm taking a stab at it, so I don't have to ever say, it would have been cool if I would have tried that. You know, I'm going to try it. So right now I'm publishing one game and started a company to do that. And, that will be a success if that's all I ever do. But then
Right. It
also leaves the door open to kind of grow beyond that, too, and maybe turn it into a thing, you know? Yeah. So that's kind of the journey that I'm on right now is, you know, I'm getting ready to launch my first, you know, Kickstarter in August for the game that I did with Philip. And I'm really digging into this process, you know, like everything about it, from the marketing to the project management of working with a graphic designer and the artists and kind of connecting with bloggers and you know, kind of coming up with, like, learning to tell the story of the game and then playtesting the game and make sure that the game and all its working bits and pieces are there and everything. It feels familiar because I've experienced it on another level, but being the guy in the driver's seat is different, and it's also challenging and it's also thrilling, you know. It's a really kind of fun place to be, especially when you start hearing those little bits of feedback, you know, like we just launched the cover image for the game on BoardGameGeek,
and it's just gorgeous.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, Jackie Davis did the art. She worked on Battle of the Ball and Euphoria. So I snatched her up because it's just, she did the right kind of stuff for the feeling that I wanted to have in this game. And I don't know if we even mentioned the name of the game, but it's Fidelitas. Maybe I did earlier, but I was just thinking
one of us should probably say the name of your game.
Yeah, just like all these different pieces that I'm working on. It's really exciting, and the feedback that's coming in is really encouraging because people are into that. We launched the cover image, and people are like, this looks really good, and I'm already seeing some ways to improve some stuff on that, and you know, the feedback I've gotten from the reviewers that are like, hey, we're getting ready to post a review, here's a question, or here's my general feelings before I post the review, like, they're all super positive so far, and like, getting me pretty geeked that, like, all right, I wasn't crazy when I said I'm going to do this, because people see something in this game, and in the artwork that I've chosen to go with, And it's really coming together, and it's going to be a thing. You know, I'm really confident in what the product that we are getting ready to put out there. You know, and that's fun. You know, and then what's cool about this is, like, my life, my personality, you know, like this game project will end at some point and then it'll be a new project. And that freshness is really huge for me. Like I get bored if I don't do something new, you know, like
right.
I can't imagine being the one guy who just does the same thing every day, you know, day after day forever, you know, like I have to be involved in kind of different creative pursuits. So, you know, I'm finding that like I'm suited for this in some neat ways so far, at least. And I'm excited to see how true that is and how that all plays out.
That's awesome, man. Well, cool. Well, let's that was a good discussion here. Let's we talked about doing some pitching here, and neither one of us brought an official game to pitch, I don't believe. So so we talked about just doing some fun pitch stuff here. So you said you had an idea, so I'll let you talk about that.
Let's do that. So this is kind of the idea was really just some constraints. So we can maybe even call it just a pitch challenge. And there's a 2-word, 3-word theme that popped into my head today. And I thought, okay, I like to play filler games. I want to put out filler games. My podcast, 20 Minutes of Filler, is about filler games. So let's make sure that whatever game we make is a filler game. So the filler game kind of criteria that Andy and I have for the show is that it has to be easy to teach. That it has to be an approachable theme, that it has to be replayable. It has to have meaningful decisions, and it has to be quick. It has to play in a reasonable amount of time, like 30 minutes ish. So those sound like fair parameters as far as that goes.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, and so I just came back from vacation. And I thought of the idea of approachable themes, and I just thought, and I was thinking about you too, because I was thinking about Water Balloon Washout and how that's a pretty approachable, kind of fun summertime theme, you know. Yeah. And I thought about Pool Party. All right. So this is the idea that I had that popped in my head: a pool party game, something to do with cards. And there's a grid of cards that make up the pool, and they're double-sided cards. On one side, it's an empty pool. On the other side, it's a character in a pool, or like a floaty in the pool. And I don't know what any of this stuff does yet, and what you have in your hand, or maybe it's an empty space and you have cards in your hand and you're playing cards to make the grid, and when the pool is full, the game ends or something. So that is the seed of the idea. Let's make that a game.
What's the how big's the grid, do you think?
The grid. I would think pools, in my experience, are generally rectangular. So let's say like a 4x6 grid.
4x6. Okay.
So that's 24 cards in the grid. So we could get away with having a 36 or a 54 card, you know, deck of cards. I like components light. I would love to just be a pure card game for some.
Yeah,
reason.
Yeah. I think that's totally doable. So yeah, I'm trying to think. I like the idea of you flip over to reveal, like, you know what I mean, like a card that's there.
Yep.
And that maybe when you reveal an object, it does something, or, I'm trying to think of, like, I mean, tons of objects are popping into my head, but, like, inner tubes and, you know, different things. One thing that pops into my head that would be cool would be, what if some of the objects took up multiple squares?
Ooh.
Like, you know, like those big floaty island-looking things, right?
Okay.
So you flip over one, and it's not going to do something right away, right? Like, you need to get the other piece next to it.
Ooh.
Okay. That's one of the first things that pops into my head.
Okay, yeah. So here's something, too, that I'm thinking about. Okay, I'm thinking about how would you win this game, right? Like, maybe it's like simple, whoever has the most fun at the pool before the lifeguard closes it down because it's full, right? So like all the cards are flipped over means everything in the pool has been revealed, and when that happens, that means the pool is full and the lifeguard says there's too many people in the pool, it's closed, right? And fun could just be some sort of points that you get. And then you said this island thing, and that struck my idea, is maybe that the grid is a specific deck of cards, right, that makes up the grid, and it's different, and you have to like flip the cards over, and if it's something and you have a hand of like character cards of your color and you can play them to a certain type of floaty, right, but there could be a timing issue there, like where you choose to either do. I think filler games are pretty good for doing one or two things on your turn, right?
Right.
Like, so you like you can either flip a card or you can play a card, right? And maybe you flip things, or you can maybe change the position of things in the pool too. That could be like a third choice.
Or what if here's a thought? What if you every turn you have to flip a card, right? Because once all the cards are flipped, the game ends, right? Because then the pool is full. So that drives the game forward. If you say every turn you must flip a card, and then your chosen action can either be use the ability on the card you flipped, play a card, or flip another card, say.
Okay.
So, like, you've got three options, or maybe two is enough, but you only get... So you get to flip a card and then do one thing.
Yeah.
Because I agree that kind of limits your choices, but what can, you know, say I'm trying to make the game end. Maybe I just flip two cards on my turn because I think I've got it. Like, and I like the idea that you have characters that you're trying to get into the pool based on either a color or suit or something that allows you to get them in there. I mean, an easy metric for winning could just be the most kids in the pool of yours. Whoever has the most kids in the pool takes it at the end, you know?
Okay. Yeah. Another idea I'm having is I know you're into powers and stuff, right?
Like, I am.
But I'm just thinking about that extra layer, like removing that first. So remove the like it does something. But what if they're just like, so say there's an island and that's four cards in the grid. And then there's like a two-card air mattress, and there's two pieces of it, so they're, like, puzzly, right? There's a one-card inner tube. There's a one-card or three-card pool noodle or something, right?
Yeah.
And these are the different flotation devices that are in the pool. You shuffle them, and it's a random grid that you don't know where it is. So you flip a card to reveal it, right?
Yep.
And you can place maybe you can't put anybody on it or something until it's completely revealed, and then you get points based on how many of your color you get on that thing.
Yep.
So if you have three of your kids on the four-person island, you get more points than you would get if you put one person on the one-person inner tube. But the inner tube is easy. You can grab it really quickly.
Yeah. And if you wanted to specialize it to make it a little more difficult, your kids, well, you could put them at anything, could have a thing that would give them a better bonus.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So maybe you're like, gosh, this big island is open. I want to get my kids on it. But this kid prefers an inner tube. And now the inner tube gets flicked over later and somebody steals it because I don't have the kid to put on it, you know? Or do I hold this kid out and hope for the inner tube? In fact, something you could do to really mess with people is make it a 24-card grid but have, like, 26 cards.
Ooh, so it might not be there yet.
So you could be missing part of an island or part of... And some of the cards would just be water, right?
Yeah.
So some of the cards missing might be water, but they might be that third piece to the island that you're gunning for, hoping that's going to win you the game.
For sure.
That, you know, that lack of knowledge could really make the game a lot more strategic, I think. I mean, I could be wrong, but I know that a lot of times when you have something randomized, it's always nice to take out a couple things so that people don't know the full information, you know?
That's true. That's always a good deal. So you're okay. We're talking about kids that have they can get points anywhere, but they can get a bonus if they're at their preferred kind of their favorite floaty or whatever.
Yeah. I think that fits the theme.
Absolutely. And here's another thing that just popped into my head also, because I don't really listen to you. I just come up with my own ideas while you talk.
Hey, me too.
Awesome. So you flip over a card on every turn. And then you can play one of your characters to an empty spot in a floaty. They have to be on a floaty. They can't be on a water space. They have their preferred one where they score more at the end of the game. But what if your kid... So another action would be you play a kid, or you can... if your kid is in a tube, he can push something that is adjacent to him in the pool that's already been revealed. Right, and maybe that's the only way that you can move things around, is because, like, you think about, you're floating in a pool, another little floaty bumps up against you, you push it away and it moves one space over, right?
Uh-huh.
So you have to get a kid, it may not be an optimal position, but you can push them, right? Push the thing that's next to you, and maybe if there's a kid on it, you flip the kid off the raft and they go back into the discard pile or back into the other player's hand. So it's a way of like clearing that space
right.
that you really, really need, but you have to strategically get yourself next to that player.
Right. That just made me have a thought that could be, this thought sounds really bad theme wise, just because it sounds mean, but if you play a kid, like say maybe, you know, you said there's a lifeguard. What if there's a lifeguard card and that lifeguard card is doing something. I don't know if maybe each turn it just automatically shifts one square up and it's just walking around the pool.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But if you put a kid in open water, that's going to attract his attention because they're more likely to need to be rescued.
Well, so he moves to that position there. And maybe you can't play a kid in the row where the lifeguard is.
Because the lifeguard's a jerk, right?
Yeah.
That could be... That would add a kind of an interesting layer of strategy. And then I think you don't even need any sort of abilities on those when you flip something, you know. You just have it be, you know. And then at that point, maybe, too, the kids having favored things doesn't matter. Or maybe it does, you know. I kind of like that idea that the lifeguard is just... And he wouldn't even have to walk all the way around the pool. He could just be walking back up and down the side. You know what I mean?
Oh, right, because it's a column. Like, it's... I mean, it would be... He walks along the sixth side or something like that.
So every six turns, he gets to the end. But you can throw a kid in open water to yank him back to try and help yourself. Now, that would stink because you'd lose that kid for the turn or maybe for longer. You know what I mean?
Right. But it could also be a defensive move too, right, where you yank him to a row that you know...
Somebody wants to play in.
Your opponent is going after.
And knowing that on your next turn, when you're going to go, he's going to move again. Yeah, I like that a lot. That's pretty cool.
Awesome. I don't know. I mean, like, it definitely has something there. I like the idea of the kind of back and forth, and you're trying to manipulate the water to kind of get it the pieces together, and you can't use that floaty until... Because you might spend a lot of your game, like, putting something together, and last minute are able to play your characters on it and score some extra points to kind of pull it off at the end. So you can either just say, I want to get kids in the water and on floaties immediately, or I want to try to get other people's kids off, or I want to put this best raft possibility together so I can get more points or get my kids next to each other or something like that. Maybe they don't have to be together on a single floaty. Maybe there's just different colored single floaties, and the more your kids are next to each other, because it's not very thematic to say, well, this pool noodle has been ripped into three pieces and you have to put it back together.
That is true.
You know what I mean? So if we use single floaties, they can just be like together in groupings or in sets with your characters on them or with more points or some other kind of scoring thing.
So it'd be cool then if one of your kids had floaties on, like little swimmy floaties.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to make like chains of kids, the swimmy floaty kid, you could save him to throw him in the open water to join a chain together, and the lifeguard won't mess with him because he's got floaties on.
That might be kind of cool. That's awesome. So, like, if you maybe, like, you could have a four-player game with six kids each, right? Like, each person has six kids in their hand.
Yep.
And maybe you just use whatever kid you want to at that point, Yeah, maybe some of them have preferences. Maybe some of them are related to a color of a floaty, or some of them, or one or two of them have the floaties on their arms already.
Yep.
The water wings. That's good. Maybe only one type of kid can push somebody off the raft if they're next to them.
Yeah, like you got like the bully or something.
Yeah, yeah. Because bullies are cool. We should glorify that, right?
Well, I mean, you know.
No, I know. They're totally friends that are just having fun in the pool.
You could actually have, though, like the bully kid, when he flips someone, he goes back to your hand because the lifeguard's going to kick him out of the pool.
That's true. So he does what you can leave him alone and not flip anybody to keep your person together to get your chain.
Right.
Or you could use him at the risk of losing some points.
Right. Because you may not get him back out again, you know?
That's true.
You could, too, make it that all the little inner tubes are different colors. And that kids can only be played on certain colors for points. So, like, the bully can be played on any color for 0 points, or green and red for 5 points. You know what I mean? So, like, so that way you can always play your kid anywhere, and you can always pull your kid back from anywhere, but you can't do it on the same turn. You know, if my kid's on an inner tube, I can pull him back, but I can't going to be able to play him again. You know what I mean? That's going to be my move that turn. Right. And if I put the bully out on a green and he's worth 5 points, but then I use him to flip a kid and he comes back and that person takes the green one, well, now, you know, now I can't get back on that spot. He's going to be worth 0 points at the end of the game. So,
yes.
Could also have a slightly negative point system for anybody, for any kids who are not in the pool. But that might overly complicate the math on it.
Right, right. But yeah, I mean, and there's, I like that we have options right now, because there's so many options for scoring. We could do the connecting people in a chain to get points, or they could have their own specialty they get points for. So there's no problem of figuring out a good way to get points. You just have to play with it until you figure out what the best way is.
Right.
And I like the idea of certain kids have, now we're back to the ability thing. So instead of the pool having the ability, which isn't very thematic anyway, you have different personalities on the kids.
Right, which is super thematic.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Maybe there's a kid who's afraid of water, so like he'll only go in the pool between like two other kids like of his team that will like help him, you know, stay afloat or something like that. Or maybe there's a shallow end and deep end too or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's not a bad idea. And you have an easy end game, right? The game ends when you've flipped over the last, like, the last pool card.
Well, that would work out to be either 12 turns, right? Or it would be, 12 turns per player or 6 turns per player or, what would that be, 8 in a, no, that's bad math, isn't it? No, that's good math.
Yeah, in a 3-player game, it would be 8, yeah.
Yeah, so...
That might not be enough, actually.
Yeah. Quick is good when we're talking about a filler game.
True. Right? I'm just saying, like, I don't know how much strategy you can plan in 12. Well, 12 turns you could. 6 turns, that might be tough. It might be better suited just as a 2-player game.
Yeah. There are some good fillers that are just for 2 people, but here's another idea too, right? You just make the grid bigger for more kids.
That's true.
So you double the size of your grid, you could have the same amount of turns per game for each number of players. It's just a matter of, like, remove the blue inner tubes or whatever.
Could market it like Water Balloon Washout, buy 2 copies, play with twice as many people. I'll tell you, man, I've sold more copies of that game because of that than anything, I think.
Yeah?
Because I'm like, well, you might as well buy an extra copy. And I plan at conventions, too, to do super good pricing for 2 copies rather than 1. So that it's like a no-brainer. Like, I might as well get 2 copies.
That's true. That's a good way to keep production costs down and to get people to, you know, throw in a little more.
Right. You know?
But it's also fun to just have the whole game in the box.
Totally. I was thinking about, like, you could still have a... If you wanted it to be a 4-player game, 6 kids for each player, that's 24 cards...
Yep.
So that leaves you 1 life card, so that's 25 cards.
Yep.
The life card, although, could also just be 1 token in the game. I mean, if that was easier, but it seems like an extra card is always going to be easier and cheaper than a token. So that's 25 cards, so you've got 29 more cards you could put in. See, that's, I think it would have to be like a 72 card deck, maybe?
Yeah, or we could have less. We could have less kids too. You know, you could have 4 kids.
That's true. You have
the bully, the water wing, and 2 generic kids. You know, like you have 2 specials and 2 regulars, and then or 5 each, and then that's 20, and you. Well,
that leaves you with 34 cards. Which 34? Yeah. Does that make a grid?
I don't know. This is that part.
You'd need 36 for a grid.
Okay.
6 times 6 would be... Well, that'd be 6 times... 6 times 5 would be 30, though. So you could do a 30 grid, but in a 4-player game, that is... That isn't... It has to be a number divisible by 4.
So 28 or 32.
Yeah, so 32 36. Cards. So if you did 32 plus 20, that's 52. Oh, plus a lifeguard card and something else.
Yeah, something else. Maybe there's 2 lifeguards, or maybe there's what would else be somebody who crashes a party and does something interesting? Maybe a turd card, so it's like somebody pooped in the pool.
Oh, that's gross.
Yeah, that was lowbrow, like Caddyshack humor.
I was thinking like an overly protective mom or something.
Oh, Or, like, it could be, like, a cannonball something. Like, I don't know. I'm thinking about a cannonball for some reason. Like, somebody who just runs through, like, they're not invited to the party, and they crash the party, and they jump in the pool, and then they run away. I don't know what that would do in the game, but, or how that would work. But, yeah, there's, that's good, man. It's, I mean, it's simple, and there's something there, man.
So you heard it here first, 2015, coming from Green Couch Games, designed by Jason Katarski and Jason Slingerland, Pool Party. It's going to be great. It's going to be a big deal.
I'm into it, man. I'm into it. We got to do something with this.
So, yeah, this would be a fun game to prototype and try out.
Yeah, because, like, you need some kids and you need some inner tubes, and, like, that's the prototype, and then you figure out what to do with them. That's one of the ways that I love the design. Like, I made up another card game that I have in the pipes that it just, like, I set out some cards in front of me and said, I'm going to make a game out of this. and I worked until I had a game, you know, out of those components. So, like,
nice.
Setting those constraints that way, it can be kind of fun.
It can.
Awesome.
Hey, we did good, man. Hey, we are we're busting out the limits here with time. So,
cool.
Well, hey, man, before we go, obviously, I want to give you a chance to plug Fidelitas again, and 20 Minutes of Filler, which I just want to say is a great podcast, one of my favorites to listen to. I mean, and even thanks. The fact that I know Andy and Jason, which I would actually call a negative for listening to the show, I still think it's awesome. So, no, it's a really fun show. You guys talk, the biggest bad thing I would say about your show is it makes me want to go out and buy games every time I listen to your show.
I know, we talk about these $10 games,
right?
Like, and everybody can afford $10, but after what we're on 22, 23 shows now,
right,
or something, like you can spend some money, man.
Right. There's always something for everyone, I think, on it. So yeah, I love that about your show.
Well, thanks, dude. I really appreciate that. You know, and I love what you guys do too. And thank you for having me on. Like, it's really cool to listen to your show week after week as a designer, because just the creativity, you know, gets my juices flowing, and it's a good resource for the design community. You know, so you know, even though you guys aren't publishing games every month, you know, you're providing something that matters to our little niche in the gaming world, man. And I
appreciate
that.
Well, thanks. We try our best, you know, we try and make ourselves look stupid to make life easier for everyone else. So if we can't teach you lessons, we at least can serve as a warning sign for things not to do. So
that's awesome. So, yeah, plugs. So like Jason said, my show with Andy Lennox is 20 Minutes of Filler podcast that comes out usually on Mondays or Tuesdays, and weekly mostly. And it's a 20-minute show about games that are like 20 minutes long. You know, it gives you a little bit of variety there. We try to keep it around 20 minutes. It's available in iTunes, or you can go to 20 minutesoffiller.wordpress.com, or you can get it straight on boardgamegeek.com if you look up podcasts. Green Couch Games is my new company, and it is the only kind of web presence we have right now is on Facebook. It's facebook.com/greencouchtabletop. And Fidelitas is the game that I am going to be publishing, designed by myself and Philip Duveri. It's a card game of medieval meddling. It takes about 30 minutes to play. It's going to be $20 shipped in the U.S. by now there should be some reviews popping up to give you a real good feel for the game, but it's just a quick 2-4 player game with some hidden agendas where people are trying to gain the most influence as people who want to be worthy of leading the revolt against the corrupt crown in the city that they love. They are faithful citizens, hence the name Fidelitas, which is the Latin word for fidelity or faithfulness.
Nice.
Yeah, the last thing, what else is going on? Yeah, so that's going to be hitting Kickstarter on August 1st. $20 shipped anywhere in the U.S. Plus, there'll be some international shipping stuff.
Nice.
So it's a bit of game for a low price point. So we hope you'll check it out, and then we'll have your support early on. Later in the fall, I have a game coming out with Crash Games called Dead Drop, and it is a micro game that is a little bit of memory, a little bit of deduction, where your spy is trying to uncover hidden information, and it's. It played at a bunch of Origins, and a lot of people seem to be really digging it. And,
yeah, it's a fun game. I really liked it.
That's awesome. Thanks, dude. So, yeah, that's kind of what's going on with me. You can find me on Twitter @Jason Kotarski, JasonKotarski. And I think that is that'll be enough for this the shameless self promotion, I guess.
Thanks again for coming on the show. So I want to thank all the listeners out there for listening, as you always do. You can find me on Twitter at @JASlingerland. You can find the podcast on Twitter at @podcastBTG. You could email us some awesome questions at buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on iTunes. If you went to iTunes to find us, hey, maybe give us a 5-star review. That would be pretty awesome. And in addition to that, you can always catch us podcast guys on Something from Nothing, our bi-weekly Google Hangout show that we do with regularly with Chevy Dodd, Rob Couch, and also, of course, TC Petty. It's a good time, and we always have some really fun designers on there. Sometimes we get super famous people who are really awesome and want to talk to us, and that always increases our ego. So, yeah, we just thank you guys for coming back every week. And, hey, one thing I want to say, we did break 1,000 Twitter followers on the thing, but because Rob's not here, I'm not going to announce the free game we're going to give away. So,
you just give it to me instead.
Yeah, right. So when Rob gets back, we're going to announce the little contest we're going to have to give that game away. It's an awesome game. It's a big box game. I think you guys are going to really be excited about it. It's brand new. Got it from the publisher, who we're very thankful for. So, yeah, good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
Well, normally the end of the show is filled with screw-ups that Rob made. Unfortunately, since Rob wasn't here this week and Jason Katarski and I are just awesome with no screw-ups, we really got nothing for you. So that's it. Good night again. Bye-bye now.